Welcome to the Rogue Startups Podcast, where two startup founders are sharing lessons learned and pitfalls to avoid in their online businesses. And now, here's Dave and Craig.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Rogue Startups. This week on the podcast, I have Jordan Gall, founder of Carthook. For those who don't know, Carthook is in the e-commerce space with a bunch of big integrations with Shopify these days. Jordan is running a big team and kind of big business, and someone I really look up to as someone who's kind of like that next step ahead in the journey as a founder. And today, Jordan and I are going to talk a lot about team and process, and really like the product process, I think is that's the term we use. Jordan, is that the term that you guys use, like for how you build shit?
Yeah, product development process, right? That's the overarching, the umbrella of where all this fits in, from the way engineers feel all the way to, you know, how our sprints are organized.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, so you co-host the Bootstrap Web podcast with our mutual friend, Brian Castle. And I love hearing you guys talk about process. And I know Brian is a huge process guy, particularly kind of how you guys work. And I mean, we're finding 2.5 years in to Castos being launched and almost 3 years of kind of really like breaking ground on the code that, I mean, it's been something I feel bad at, or like this has been something that I felt like we could do better all the time. And we're doing a lot better at it now than we were 6 months and a year and 2 years ago. And it sounds from what you guys talk about on the podcast that you kind of feel the same way, that it's just always iterating and always improving, but has a long way to go maybe still.
Yeah, it always feels like it has a long way to go. But there are these moments where discoveries are made. The painful part is when you make these discoveries, it always feels so obvious in retrospect that what were you thinking doing it this other way?
Yeah.
So that's painful. You constantly feel stupid about it. And then the nature of it is not static. And so even when things feel like they're in a good place, you add 2 more engineers and everything goes out the window again. Mm-hmm. So it is a constant challenge, and it's been a focus of mine over the past few weeks because I think I took a back seat to the process. I really wanted to be able to ignore it, right? If I'm being honest with myself, I took too many steps back from it and really just wanted to look at the person running the product department and say, you got this, I'll go face outward and talk to investors and partners. And I did it for too long and I ignored it for too long. And the fact remains that at this stage with a 25 person company, I still need to be really, really involved. I was about to say I care the most about the product. I think that's questionable, but I still have to be a driving force on the prioritization and the process, and also thinking about the individual people involved and how they are feeling through the process, which is something relatively new. And we're going to touch on Basecamp's shape up inevitably. May as well just start doing it now.
Yeah.
Right. One of the things you find when you're reading that book is that there's a lot of attention paid to how people feel. It's not just about optimizing this perfect process. It is acknowledging that people are important. They're the key to the whole thing.
Yep.
And people have feelings. And when you put people into these specific situations with certain expectations, you are going to have resulting emotions from it. And those are really important to the success of the process.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
You know, so that's one of the things that we've found as we're growing from like almost 0 to 1, you know, we're 2, 3, 5. Now we're 7 people, you know, mix of full-time and part-time. And what we find is every time you introduce a new person, so we introduce someone for kind of UX and design recently. And then it's like the big question is, how do we take and offload the right part of that from my plate to where I can give, and I feel like, you know, hearing you on the podcast, I feel like you're a bit in the same boat. It's like, how can I add my, say, domain expertise and an opinion about what the product should be to the process and then let the people that are that actually have the skill, especially in like in design and development and copywriting, and it's all part of the process, do their job, that they're better than me at that individual thing, but that I can then have my input on kind of what we're building, what it will look and feel like ultimately, and not micromanage every aspect of it. That's like where I'm like, this has to just suck for everyone else because I'm just like hovering, I feel like, all the time. And we're trying very hard not to let that happen. But that's, I think when you go from 1 to 2 to 4 to 5 to 6, 7, 25 people, that has to be something you have to be really intentional about, right?
So I'd like to commend you on two things. First, that you hired for design and UI so early on. We still do not have a full-time design UI person, and it was a mistake. So we should have invested in that a long time ago. So I think you're doing the right thing by investing in that early. We've worked with outsourced people and freelancers, specifically with Jane from UI Breakfast, and she has been a savior, but we still need a full-time person. Mm-hmm. The second thing I'd like to commend you on is the hovering is not necessarily bad. It depends on the way you do it, right? You don't want to hover and basically black out someone's talent and turn them into someone that just does what you tell them to do. That's not good. But the hovering is what I was alluding to earlier, in that I stepped too far back from the process. I should have hovered more. I should have cared more about how these individual things were going out. And I really started to see myself as like, look, I need to be outside of that process. I need to trust other people into the process in there. And I need to just be okay if not everything is coming out exactly the way I want it to, because I don't want to be that type of boss. Mm. That I went too far the other way. And so I don't think hovering is necessarily bad. You have to do it the right way to make sure people feel that you trust them. The way I put it, so we just hired someone new as a product manager here in Portland. The challenge is that you're trying to hire someone as talented as possible and as confident in their craft as possible and as talented as possible. And then what you're telling them is all that talent and all of your brains and experience, I'd like for you to put that aside because you don't have the domain expertise. And I'd like for you to basically just be a project manager, be a scrum master.
Yeah.
But only for a few months. And as you become more familiar with the space and our customers and the needs and the market, then you can inject your opinion. So it's like, I'd like for you to walk in here and be humble enough to put your opinion aside, because let's be honest, you don't know what our customers want. You don't know what you're talking about yet, but that's not where you want to end up in your role. And so just do that for a little while. And then as your confidence builds, start injecting your opinion. Mm. And in that in-between period, guess whose opinion is required? That's mine. In your case, it's yours. So it's not hovering. It's a baton handoff, but it's not all at once.
How is that going? Because I can imagine that's a tough pill for someone to swallow. That's a talented person that wants to come in and join a high growth startup, Portland area. Like those are really talented people with you know, probably like a high opinion of themselves. How is that going to tell someone to come in, sit down, shut up, and do this? And in a couple of months, I'll you know, take the training wheels off.
So if you put it that way,
that's a harsh version of it, right? But I mean, that's
the thing. This goes back to feelings. The way it needs to be communicated has everything to do with the outcome. Like it has to be communicated in an empathetic way that sympathizes with their situation and takes into account that they do have a high opinion of themselves, and rightfully so. And so it's not about, hey, look, you don't know what you're talking about, and I do, so just follow me until I tell you otherwise. It really needs to be, let's set you up for success in this role.
Yeah.
Success in this role is not about the next 3 months. It's about the longer term. And what's going to set you up for success in this role is that gradual intake of domain expertise and market knowledge and what our customers want. And the expectation on my side is not that you're just going to do everything amazingly well and I don't have to worry about it anymore. That's not the expectation. Let's both set the right expectations from both sides, that there needs to be a handoff and that we will get there together. And a year from today, your opinion will have a much larger say in what you're doing than right now. Mm. So I think it was more about let's set ourselves up for success here and let's set the right expectations that's okay, that me needing to do more of the opinion piece is okay. That's actually the plan.
Yeah.
So I think it's good because if you think about the other person's point of view, they're looking at me and saying, so what do you expect from me here? How am I going to set myself up for success in this new role if I kind of don't know e-commerce that well right now? And that's really what I'm answering, those doubts.
Yeah, I can relate. So this is the same approach we're taking with, you know, we hired a full-time marketer, Denise. She's about 3 weeks in right now. And that's exactly the framing and the positioning of her inside the business and inside the marketing kind of organization at this point is you have a ton of marketing experience. You don't have a ton of podcasting experience. And so I will set you up hopefully for success in bringing your existing experience over and applying it to SaaS and podcasting with, you know, my experience in the business and what customers want and the kind of language that we typically use and stuff like that. But it's been great. And this is a tangent, but it's been great to let her challenge my assumptions about a lot of these things. And we've been working really collaboratively. And I can imagine that's what you're hoping for out of this new product person is like, you rightfully know a lot about, you think you know a lot about e-commerce and what your customers want and stuff. And this other person might come in a few months or 6 months, a year, be able to really like productively challenge those and like push the envelope a little bit with what the product does and where the business is positioned.
Yeah. And I think, you know, what I do is I have, you know, one of the things I like so much about Notion is that ability to have this public documentation area and then also a private one. And so we have a lot of our docs public so everyone can access them. And then I have my own private docs. And that's where I keep a lot of notes for one-on-ones. And so when someone's new, I am ready for that fact, the fact that they're new and that this process is going to happen over a few month period. That's in my notes. So every time I have a one-on-one, we're talking about that and acknowledging it and seeing how they feel in that arc. And so, right, an example this morning, we hired someone on the communications front. She's more than just a content writer. It's more about branding and positioning and language and keeping things consistent and along with content and all this stuff. So we hired her, I think, maybe 2 months ago now. And this morning when we came in, we have a new feature coming out, but it's one of these features that changes things for existing customers. And so before launching it, we need to communicate with everybody. So this morning I came in and I realized, oh, I don't need to talk about the details of this. I'm going to tell people that this feature is going to come out and we have to communicate. And then I'm going to point to her and say, and she decides what is required in that communication before the feature gets launched. So it almost felt like, hey, we've been doing this for 2 months and now it's starting. Mm-hmm. The fact that they're comfortable enough, they've gotten there, they understand our customers, they know how all the stuff works internally, and now I'm just handing that off entirely because she's got it. Yeah. But look, yeah. Let's take a it's just time. It's a matter of time.
Yeah.
So let's take a step back. First of all, we went all business on this, Craig. Let me say hi to everybody. Thanks for having me on the podcast. Awesome. I love your podcast and enjoy it. Also getting your monthly updates on Castos. Very interested in the podcasting space overall. But thanks for having me on the podcast. Hello to everybody. And maybe that's a good opportunity for us to kind of like chill on that tangent and back it up and talk about, you know, product development process overall.
Yeah, no, for sure. I'm sorry. I jumped right into the weeds.
Me too.
it is more and more my only like primary responsibility. Sounds like it's more and more yours. And honestly, something like I love product because it touches almost all of the aspects of the business, and arguably in SaaS these days especially is like the most important.
Yeah, I agree.
So yeah, as much as you're comfortable, I'd love to hear personally, and I'm sure everyone else would love to hear like a what your product process looks like. When you guys say, like, how do you decide what to build? How do you get the dev team and design involved? How does marketing get involved? And how does success get involved? Because I know you guys have all those groups.
Yeah. So I think where I'd like to start is to talk about some of the problems we've experienced in that process and what led me to refocus on it, and then we can talk about where we are right now in adjusting that process to make it better.
Yeah, sounds great.
So over the past few months, what we have felt happening, so we have two teams. We have a Portland team that is what we call the customer team. Marketing, success, support, product. And then we have our engineering team in Slovenia that's engineering and QA. And so one of our biggest challenges is coordination between those two teams and those main functions of, we're talking to customers, we know what they want and what they're experiencing. Engineering needs to be responsive to that and drive the product forward. And how do we get a process between those two teams to make sure that we are building the right things in the right way for the right people? So that's our challenge. And what I started to feel happening is we would speak to customers, we'd have our own ideas, we'd have customer feedback, and we would set that as priorities, and that would head into the development process. And what would happen is when things came out of that development process and they were being released, we have an early access process. So anything big, anything even medium, does not just get launched into production. It gets launched into an early access, and then a handful of our customers are able to access it. And that also allows our support team to write documentation and our success team to experiment with it. And so everyone understands exactly what this thing is before it goes into production. And so what kept happening is that we would set a priority, let's call it a new feature, and that would head into the development process. And what would come back out would be right, but it would be a few degrees off. And it would be just a little different from what we expected, but off by just enough that it kind of wasn't useful. It wasn't going to satisfy the customers because it wasn't about to match their expectations of the feature. And so what that led to was it led to no positive feedback loop either way.
Mm-hmm.
So, right, the customer team would be, okay, we got this information, we have this idea, we understand what people need, we understand why, let's get it in. And then what would come back out of engineering would be a little off. And so the customer team wasn't happy. And then the customer team wasn't happy, and therefore then the engineering team isn't happy. And no one's getting any positive feedback. No one's saying, thank you so much, you nailed it, this feature's coming out, it's gonna make people happy. And the customer team wasn't pushing that to customers, and the customer saying to them, oh my God, this new feature is amazing, thank you so much. And that was, it's a little depressing.
Yeah.
So, right, we're back on emotions again. And so what happened was I went to Slovenia. I go there every 4 months or so. Hugely, hugely important. Every time I go, I'm on an airplane, you know, like 8 hours into my 20-hour journey there. And I always think to myself, why am I going all this way to do a bunch of one-on-ones I could have done on Zoom? And then as soon as I get there, within a few hours, I realize that's why I come here, because it's completely different. And so this last trip, I went in with a lot of worrying. I went in, what's going on exactly? Why are things coming out a few degrees off? Why aren't people happy? What's happening? And what I saw was an environment that was lacking that positive feedback loop. And they were working really hard. And then they were pushing things out, and they would finally get this thing out after working, you know, 12-hour days for 2 weeks in a row. And then they got no love back. Mm. Just nothing back. Just, oh, it's a few days late, or oh, it's a few degrees off, and okay, we'll push it. And it was like, you know, that red light was going off. Like, this is not sustainable. This is not an environment where people are happy and stay for a long time. And so that is what led me to relook at the whole process and say, hold on a second, what is going on? And that's right when Basecamp's book came out.
Yeah.
And when I write, the book's called Shape Up. When I first read the title, I was like, these judgy motherfuckers are going to tell me to get better again. No, I thought that's what Shape Up meant. Like, get better. I'm like, yeah, I know I'm not as good as you guys. Okay, relax. But then you start reading it and you realize that's not what they mean by Shape Up. What they're referring to is the shaping process. And the shaping process was this gaping hole in our product development process that barely existed. And so what we realized was that there's no wonder these things are coming out of engineering a few degrees off, because we're not doing the work up front before it goes to engineering to really nail what the customers want and why, and then articulating it and designing it enough to give the right roadmap for success of that feature. And then here we are, we're judging the engineering team saying, hey, how come everything keeps being a few degrees off? When in reality, it was completely on us and on the Portland team side that we weren't doing the work required for success of that particular feature.
Yeah.
And so that's really what led us to this focus now on the process.
Yeah. I mean, the shape up, the whole book is fantastic. We'll link to it in the show notes for sure. And everyone that, even if you're a solo founder building this yourself, I think you should read it. If you're a team or leading a team, you should definitely read it because it opened our eyes a lot to the whole process, but really the why we're building this and like, what is the question they ask is like, what is the purpose of this thing we're building in the customer's eyes? And I think that's like a simple question, but it's a super complicated process to answer that as a team and have everyone understand why you're building something because it talks to like almost all the aspects of the business, which I think we'll get into like how everybody is involved in deciding that and communicating and making sure everybody's on the same page with the why, because then it probably removes those couple degrees of separation of what your Portland team says and what the Slovenian team builds, because the why is not super clear, maybe.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And yeah, so that process clarifies for both sides. And one of the things that our CTO always tries to remind me, and individual engineers too, they always remind me that someone else's process cannot be copy and pasted onto your team. It's just not going to work.
Well, especially a business like Basecamp that's been around for, 15 years?
Right.
And I mean, they can do things that you and I can't dream of in terms of the maturity of the product and the team and their maturity, right. Honestly, as founders.
Yes.
So we're not there.
All of the different factors that are different for every company and every team and every size, every product, all these different things. And everyone is their own special snowflake of a combination of product issues and founder issues and market issues and whatever else. So I always have to caveat everything I'm talking about when I'm talking to the engineering team. And I need to always say, I understand we will need to make adjustments for our reality. Right. For us right now, handing things off to a team of developers and designers, like these smaller teams that Basecamp uses, first of all, we don't have the designers. And second of all, handing off a feature with no task list and asking that team to come up with the list of tasks the way Basecamp does it, like that's just not realistic for us. We just can't do that.
Yeah.
So all of this stuff is with a grain of salt, and it's all about the themes and concepts behind these individual parts of the process that you have to pick and choose. Basecamp is not done iterating on their process either. So it's not about, well, hey, this is perfect right now, so let's just use it as that. Yeah, that caveat is rightfully made by the engineering team every time we come across this.
Yeah, I think it's worth pointing out too, we all love Basecamp and the transparency that they provide to all of us, but they're not the only ones. And we've pulled some inspiration from a few others that I think are noteworthy, and we'll link to these as well. So GitLab is a super, super transparent organization, and they have basically their whole product process laid out.
Nice.
Atlassian and Notion actually has a lot of their stuff laid out. So we've pulled bits and pieces from each one of them. And then like you're saying, took the concept of it and like really distilled it down to our little, whatever, 5 or 7 person team, because they're all, you know, these huge venture backed companies that we can't do what they're doing because we're not, you know, 100, 500 people.
Yeah. Or just not in the same situation.
Yeah. Yeah. But it really is the concepts of like, you're doing this because X, and anybody can implement that, I think, if you take the concepts of it.
Yeah. I mean, so what do you want to do? You want to give like a gist of how we run our process and then like drill into some individual parts on where we find challenges and what's working well or what's not working at all?
Yeah, I think that would be really helpful for all. I mean, for me, it would be helpful to hear kind of what you guys are doing and what's not working. And I'd love to do the same. And for everyone listening to hear kind of both sides of each of those would be cool. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think from my side of things, it will be pretty general because admittedly, I'm not that familiar with the process, right? This is one of the issues that I talked about earlier. I backed out too much.
Yeah.
And so now I'm refamiliarizing myself and making sure I do have a firm grasp on it. And I'm very familiar with Jira. So we do use Jira and we use Confluence for a lot of the documentation that goes along with these individual Jira tickets. And what we like to do is have almost everything driven by customers. We have what we look at as pain points, things that people are suffering from and we need to improve or fix, right? Those can be bugs. Those can be changing features or adding additional functionality to an integration that people really want, things like that. And then we have what we want, like our desires, like, hey, I want to add this app integration and I want this new feature. And then we have our third category is like strategic. And so in each sprint that we're running, and we run 6-week sprints, and we name them after a rotating assortment of foods. One time it's an American food, another time it's a Slovenian food, and we go back and forth. And at the end of the sprint, we cook up that food in both offices and eat it to celebrate the end of the sprint.
I love it.
Right? So more feelings. And so when we run that 6-week sprint, what we're trying to do is before the sprint starts is take a look at this mixture of pains, desires, and strategic. And unfortunately, right now, it's mostly filled with pains, whether it's bug fixes or improvements to existing features and integrations that people want. And then we have a few desires, right? A few things that don't exist right now, but we want. And then the strategic has to have a place at the table. Mm-hmm. There are still that are no one's asking for, no one's even thinking about, but I'm thinking about, and maybe another few people are thinking about, and we're looking at 6 to 12 months down the line and doing these strategic features, integrations, changes can make a big impact down the line. And so that's the way I look at it is the customers have to have their say, and then the product has to have its say, and then the management needs to have its say also.
And you guys we gather as like items in Confluence, or I'm not familiar with like all the Atlassian stuff. So you just keep these as like individual cards all in the same area, or how does like logistically, how does that work?
So there's a dumpster fire of a backlog. Yep. Right. There are whatever 250 random ideas and tasks and bugs and whatever in the backlog, which we pretty much ignore. And at any point in time, if you ask the team what we should be doing, you will get enough feedback to fill the sprint. So there's always the business priorities that are self-evident. They're just right there in front of you. People are asking about it every day. They're complaining about it every day. They want it every day. And so what we've started to do in this last sprint, as I'm refocusing on this, is I want to make sure that the direct feedback from customers is paramount. And so what we did, myself, the product person in Portland, Jessica, and our CTO, Rock, is we sat down in a conference room. We booked it out for, 4 or 5 hours. And we individually interviewed key people from the team. And we just came in and said, all right, what's your wish list for the upcoming sprint? And we gave them a few days notice so they knew that this was coming. And people came in with their notes. Okay. From my point of view, I'm the one doing demos. And from my point of view, the reason people aren't signing up is because X, Y, and Z is missing. So now we got, okay, now we have the perspective of sales blockers. These are the reasons people are not signing up. Good. We have that list. Then we talk to the support team. And from the support team, we're getting a different perspective. We're getting this. These are the things people are complaining about. These things that people don't understand, that people can't accomplish, that isn't working. Here are the bugs that are most often cited. So then we got that perspective. And then we'll talk to the success team. And we'll talk to these individual people and individual teams that we're getting a roundabout view. We don't want to just listen to support, because what support will tell you is what existing customers are having issues with or want. Yep. If you then don't talk to sales, now you're going to ignore the things that support never hears, because those people wouldn't sign up to begin with. So you don't want to leave that out. So we tried to get a full view. And then we took that and we said, okay, here's this list of priorities. Now let's add our own layer to it of what do we really think is a priority? It's a bit weird to have someone come in for half an hour and talk to you and then just look at three out of the four things they talked about and just dismiss them immediately. But that's required. It's necessary, right? When it actually comes time to prioritize, you can't do everything. And therefore, some things that people talk about that in their opinion are important, you're just not going to be able to do. So that kind of ends up in the, well, that's a backlog. That's a P2 and a P3 and a P4, as opposed to something that's P1 that's going to be lined up for the upcoming sprint.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then we have our priorities, and then those get turned into cheer tickets or epics, depending on the size and scope of the issue. And then we start filling those in with these individual tasks. And along with each one, we're getting feedback. So now we're doing more work in that shaping process. So right now, a lot of my tasks are, Jordan, you want Apple Pay to look better before we release it? Give us all that feedback. If you want this other feature, give the feedback. And so when I think give the feedback, I don't think, hey, my feedback is the most important thing. I'm going to add my feedback, and then I'm going to go to the relevant people on the team and say, what would you like to see? How would you like for it to work? Or do we have this right? Do we have that right? So that additional work, we're hoping before it goes into development, leads to better outcomes.
Yeah, I definitely want to touch on that, because that's the part of shaping up that we're really trying to implement, is to let, and kind of what you're getting at, is to let the design and UI team and like the process or product lead work on the specs before it goes to development to speed up the process. Because then you basically have teams working in parallel. And I think that for me, that's the point that we're hopefully going to improve the most on here going forward, is how we're changing our process. But I will give kind of an overview of how we run the part you just talked about, because I think it's really interesting.
Right. Everything I talked about is before development starts.
Yeah. But that's super important, right? Especially, you're an existing app with customers, and then you have this push and pull of existing customers and sales and pre-sales, and then kind of like what the founder or the product person wants. And then like if that person is different than what the business owner wants, in your case, that's even different.
So I'll pick it back up after you talk about from that point on.
Yeah.
From when development actually starts and what issues we've had there and what we're trying to do to improve. But I want to hear your side of that initial process.
Yeah. It's changed a lot, right? So at the beginning, it was me and Jonathan, our lead developer, and we were just in Slack, and everything was in Slack all the time. And we've grown up a lot. So we use Notion for everything. We used Clubhouse for a while for product-based stuff. And we kind of, I loved Clubhouse for product-based stuff, but kind of found that everything living in one place was really helpful for the entire team having visibility to what everyone else is doing. And so we have like 5 or 6 different sections in Notion right now. And the one where all of the things start is called product. And in there we have a page called pipeline. And this is all stuff that I basically run. And for you, it'd be kind of a combination of you and your product person. But in there are like the really big picture, you know, product cycles. We don't call them sprints, we call them product cycles. And like for us recently, we just released this week a no credit card trial process, right? And this is a big deal to take the credit card form away when you sign up. Like it changes, unfortunately, it changes basically everything about the, you know, the first like 50% of someone's experience in the app, marketing and onboarding, all this crap. So this was a really cool like microcosm of a product sprint for us. It was about a month. But it really let us hone in on like exactly what our process is. And a lot of stuff changed in that time. It was really cool. So everything that could exist in the next like 6 months of development goes into the pipeline page. And then within there, everybody, you know, each kind of big idea that would be a cycle gets its own page. And for us, dev cycles or product cycles are like between 2 and 8 weeks. This goes to the maturity of our app, I think, is we can't always say it's going to be 6 weeks, because some things are going to be 2 weeks, and some, honestly, like we're challenging the 8 week thing on this this product, or you know, this feature that we're looking to build, is it just might be 3 months, and it kills me. We're finishing one up now, and it just kills me. But it might really, really, really be necessary. And if it is, and if we all decide it is, then we're gonna suck it up and just do it. But So we basically, we have like the product page and the pipeline, and each of those kind of get details about answering a handful of questions. And from like a, why are we doing this one? The three questions that have to have a yes answer to one of them is, will this get us more customers? Will it let our existing customers stay longer? Or will it let our existing customers pay us more money? And really, like from a business perspective, if the answer isn't yes to one of those, then it's a little bit of an intangible, like we're the manager of an open source process, open source project with our WordPress plugin. And we have some things we should do for that don't have any real business impact. But generally, like the answer has to be yes to one of those for something to get like on the page at all. And then from there, we have a lot of questions around like, who is this for? Why are we building this? What will the marketing approach be to roll this out? So Denise on our team is going to be writing the press release or blog post for something before it gets shaped at all. And so she'll write, we're building this and this is for this type of people and it lets you do this and that's great for your podcast because of this. So she's writing the prose basically of what a feature is. From there, it gets broken up into kind of big picture things within like a feature. And from there, it will get handed off to the dev team and hopefully they kind of get the big picture from the blog post and the kind of chunks of, it needs to do this and the API needs to be like this. And then they can go dissect it down further to kind of like specifically what they need to do. And we're letting them manage all of that in their own dev board, like Trello kind of board that Notion has. So that's our process. And we're just kicking off another cycle with it now. And it's working out well so far, but it's always a work in progress. And we actually date our product process document and update the date like it's a privacy policy or a terms of service or something like that. Cause we want to, and we should like version control it or something. Cause we want to know like, this is what it is today. It's probably going to change next time, but this is like the current status at least.
Yeah. I mean, that sounds pretty evolved for the size and age of your company. That's pretty good. And especially that there's something about being forced to write this stuff out that is so easily driven past. It's so easy to just not spend an hour writing out these thoughts. But without that, you start to layer assumptions on top of assumptions.
Yeah.
And I think that writing is key to the whole thing. Being forced to explain it and then having someone else read what you're writing and being forced to communicate the nuance in something and the reasons behind it, it forces you to organize yourself. And yeah, I again, commend you on having that level of work being done in the process.
Well, I don't want to say it's selfish, but it is hopefully results driven in that we spend a lot more time than I would like. I don't know if we spend a lot of time relative to other products, but we spend a lot of time tweaking things in staging. So the developer puts it up, says, hey, here's the thing, go check it out. And I look at it kind of like you're saying and say, yeah, but this is just not what I wanted. And I'm sorry that we just spent 2 or 6 weeks or whatever it is on this thing, but we have to go back and do part of it over again. So for me, like the desire to do all this work up front is for them to be happier, to say, okay, you told me what to build, I built it and it's right. They have to feel a lot better about that than for them to build it and me say, this is not right, we need to do it again, because that has to just suck.
That's really something to avoid.
Speed. I mean, speed of like, if we don't spend 2 or 3 weeks in staging for every feature, then it's out the door that much faster.
Yeah. And we get into this, we put ourselves into a bad position in the past where we are communicating with customers and telling them when we expect it to come out because they really want it to come out. And sometimes it's we are rescuing people from canceling by telling them. And then when it gets onto staging, there's so much pressure to release it from existing customers that even if it's not exactly what we wanted, all the pressure is toward just release the thing already. We'll fix it later. Mm-hmm. And that's a bad habit to get into.
Yeah. So once you guys get, okay, we're going to build this thing, how does the process go in your case from Portland to Slovenia?
Okay, so now I have a bit less clarity on this, so I might misstate certain things. So what happens is, so we have back-end engineers and front-end engineers. We have a back-end lead and a front-end lead, and then we have our CTO, and then we have our two QA people. And so there are different groups and different teams, and things start to get distributed between the back end and the front end. And, you know, one person will have more expertise on payment processor. So if we have a payment processing integration like Afterpay, then that person's almost certainly going to get it because they have that expertise. So we try not to go too deep into expertise, make sure everyone gets a look, but typically that's something that'll happen. And one of the big mistakes that we've made in the past is around estimates. So Rock will get the features and the priority list and the bug fixes, and we will start to map those to where they need to go. And then everyone will start to get pretty full up on the sprint, and they'll understand, okay, I have a 6-week sprint. Here are these 4 or 5 things that I'm responsible for accomplishing in the sprint outside of, you know, fire issues that come along. And so a few mistakes that we've made in the past is we were not nearly as disciplined as we needed to be on that prioritization. And we were also making mistakes around estimates. So first, let's look at prioritization. What was happening was that in those 4 or 5 things that an individual engineer is responsible for during the sprint, the way we run the sprints is it's not all released at once at the end of the 6 weeks. We do releases every Tuesday and Thursday. So things are being released on an ongoing basis, but the sprint itself is contained within that 6 weeks. And so if you looked at those 4 or 5 things that an engineer was responsible for, it's usually one of those things that has a higher business priority than the other things. And so we didn't really attach that to the list. And so it's not coincidental that that thing with the highest business priority sometimes is the hairiest thing. Sometimes that's the most difficult task. Mm. And so what engineers would do is very naturally say, well, I have these 4 or 5 things. That one thing, that's pretty hairy. I'm not going to tackle that first. I'm going to bang these other things out real quick so then I can focus on that. And then what would happen is the non-business priority things would get worked on first. They would get released. I would start to grow frustrated because the thing I really wanted to get out wasn't getting out. And then as we got toward the end of the sprint and things came up and fire issues happened and bugs came up and things started taking longer than expected, guess what was the most likely candidate to get bumped into the next sprint? The business priority. The
most important thing, yeah.
The most important thing. And so we are, along with doing more work, it's almost like we had like a coming to Jesus a few days ago between myself and the engineering team and customer team. It basically said, look, the customer team is going to take on the responsibility of doing more work before it gets to you. That's our responsibility. Your side of the responsibility as the engineering team is to acknowledge the business priorities in that order and to not allow that float to happen. So it's like, we'll do more work. You employ more discipline and it will lead to better outcomes for both sides. And so that was the priority problem. The other problem was an estimate problem. And so we have in our CTO a very talented engineer. This is Rock. This is, you know, person I've been working with for 4+ years on the product. He has this amazing characteristic of optimism. You know, he's always optimistic. He can do anything. We can get it done. We can do it. Don't worry. We'll make it. Yes, we're processing $5,000 a day right now. And yes, we're processing $500,000 a day a few months later, but we're just going to figure it out. Don't worry. It's all good. Along with that optimism is a real problem when it comes to estimates. Because when you're doing software estimates, you really need to put your doom and gloom hat on. And Rock isn't a doom and gloom guy. He's an optimistic person. And so we had this tendency to underestimate how long things would take. And the biggest problem we had along with that underestimate is we were not acknowledging the surrounding dependencies. And so we'd say this feature is going to this backend engineer and that's going to take 3 days. What we didn't realize was that yes, 3 days, but then it's going to go into code review with another backend engineer. And then it's going to require another day of work from front end engineer to help, you know, get this thing into the product. And we weren't really doing a good job of factoring those into the estimates. And so take that and spread it across 4 back-end engineers and 3 front-end engineers, and everyone's got dependencies, and everything takes a lot longer than you expect it to, and everyone's being disturbed by them being the dependency for someone else's feature. And so we hadn't broken up into teams where, for this sprint, these 2 back engineers are working with this 1 front engineer, and all the dependencies are within that very small group of people. Instead, it was like this crazy web, and it's in hindsight, it's not a surprise that things were underestimated. So we've had to kind of clear that up to avoid all that hatching and cross hatching between people.
Mm. And since moving into kind of more contained groups, then I would imagine like the communication and the estimates are more accurate and concise?
Yes. I hesitate to say yes, because we really have focused on this problem over the past, sprint, and now coming into another one. So I don't have the confidence to say, yes, everything's better and we've nailed it. But the first stage is acknowledging it and understanding that it's a problem. So that has been accomplished. Yeah. Now we're in the process of figuring out what the right solutions are to that problem. But the most important part was acknowledging it and understanding why it was happening. So that was right. And that underestimation had that same effect of working really hard and then releasing something. But if you tell the customer team that's speaking to customers every day that something is coming out on Monday, and then you don't release it until, call it, the following Monday, you messed up their life by a week.
Yeah.
And so even though you worked really hard on it, you don't get the love back that you really should, because it's like, damn, now I'm real stressed. So it's a mistake on the customer team's part to set the wrong expectations with customers. It's also a mistake on the engineering team's part on giving the wrong estimate on timing and setting the wrong expectations there. So we've tried to diagnose, like, okay, if these are the outcomes that are happening and these are the resulting feelings and issues, like, how do we peel back enough layers to really understand what we are doing wrong to cause that, right? It's not just happening. Like, one of the first big realizations was, hey, we want to go faster. Let's hire another engineer. And then what happens? Everything slows down. Like, that was the first, hey, hold on a second. We're no longer in the stage of, a 3 or 4 person company, and everyone talks and everything's quick and everything's responsive, and you know about a problem way ahead of time. Like, we're no longer there. Mm-hmm. We're now officially in the organizational management stage of things, and adding new people no longer speeds things up. It now slows things down. And so we need to look at this with a completely different set of eyes, much more critical to the inputs into the system instead of just being upset about the outputs.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that I've been talking to Rob about, as part of Tiny Seed, is we are just starting to see some of our marketing efforts pay off. And this is coming full circle, don't worry. So it's like when business is going well, everyone's happy. And it a little bit is the product is probably like the most important single thing. And when growth is slow or business is struggling, all of us look at product and say, if the product was better, we could do X or we could do Y. But when you figure out a way to make marketing and sales and growth work with the product you already have, then the demands on the product team and the development team is a lot less. Like, I'm more okay with something taking a week or 2 weeks longer if we're growing anyhow and churn is low and growth is high. I'm more okay with, you want to add more tests, or we need to get UI involved in doing this thing and it's going to take 2 weeks longer. No worries. We're going to be over here, knocking out the marketing side of things. And when the product's ready, that's great. It'll give us more ammunition to go do more of what we're already doing. But I kind of feel bad, Jordan, like we're sitting here, we're not dogging on like the development cycle and the product cycle, because it's like a real thing to manage, manage the expectations of internally and externally. But I do think that a lot of us lean on the product maybe too much with respect to like our ability to be successful. And I'm pointing that finger at myself, because a lot of the times I say, if we had this thing, we could kick ass. Whereas the reality maybe isn't always that the thing is holding you back, that the product or the feature or whatever is holding you back. It's our ability to like get out there and market. So like our, I know our development team listens to this podcast. So like, I know that as we are doing the job on marketing, they're more happy because I'm less anxious, I guess.
That's fair. It's a tough balance for us. I assume for a lot of B2B software companies these days, the product really drives the thing forward on revenue, growth, and marketing spreads the gospel, but isn't the driving force. The product is still the driving force, but it's fair to view it as like we shouldn't blame the product and look to the product to solve our problems. That's still on us. I have no problem saying that I've gotten us into stressful positions based on business decisions, right? So we have flirted with profitability. And so we get profitable and then we push really hard on hiring and we're unprofitable. And that creates a lot of stress on the product and on me looking at the product to hurry up and get better. We just went from profitable to not profitable with the expectation of the product going faster and then the growth going faster because of it. Mm-hmm. And so there's something to that profitable confidence of another layer of patience, right? Not full patience. It's never, at least for me, I'm never going to be 100% patient with things, but it's not fair to just stand around looking at the product and in the engineering team saying, hurry up, you're holding everything back. Like that's more of a choice on the business side.
Yeah.
What I like to look at and tell people is look at where we are, look at our trajectory over the past few years, look at our revenue, look at the number of customers we're servicing. In reality, we don't need anything new in the product. Look at all these people that have been staying for years. We have exactly what we need to sell the product right now. Anything else is an excuse. If there are people right now using it, paying every month happily, then we can find other people like that. And so it's a cop-out to say, oh, we can't grow anymore, or we're stuck. We're waiting and we're being held back by engineering and the product. Because you have objective proof. People are paying you right now for exactly what you have in production right now. That means you can get more people like that. So remove the excuse of, oh, when we have this, it'll be better.
Yep. But to your point, if you had this other thing or this integration or whatever, then the growth can really skyrocket. Yeah. And I think that, I mean, this is a big realization for me is like you, as a SaaS business and a SaaS application, you need to spend the first probably 2 years just putting out the fires, right? Your app is going to suck for 2 years. And then at 2 years, you can start having the patience, like you're talking about, to say, okay, we have customers, the house is not on fire. We can take 3 months to build this thing and we probably will grow in that time. And then once that 3 months is up and we have this other thing, then we can really grow. But yeah, I mean, I think it takes time for those folks who are kind of just starting to say like, yep, I just have to put out fires for the first 2 years and then I can get more strategic and patient about things.
Right. Or you could go really slow and make sure there are no fires and maybe run out of money before you get there.
Yeah.
So it's there's a reason it's not easy because these things are trade-offs. And people look to raising money as an elimination, a way to eliminate those trade-offs. In reality, you're just creating a new set of trade-offs. So there's no escape. It's just hard. And you want to just put the characteristics into the business that give it more chance to be successful. And by that, I mean the pricing and the market and the nature of its growth, and does it have expansion revenue built in, and all these things. Like that's what I'm convinced. I'm convinced all the lessons I've learned from this software company are based around the characteristics of the business have so much to do with its success. The market you're in and the pricing and the, right, are you making people money or are you solving a pain? Like all these different things add up to making it much more likely to succeed or fail than just the actions of the people involved.
Yeah, no, totally. Cool. I mean, there's intrinsic things in the business that set it up for success or not. So that's a whole nother episode. I'd love to have another time, but I know we've been going on about this for a bit. But Jordan, I appreciate you coming on and chatting through kind of what you guys have been doing and learning and kind of where you are with the product process at Carthook. For folks who don't follow you online and stuff, where's the best place to connect?
Twitter is the easiest for me personally, just at Jordan Gall. If you want more podcast stuff, we have the Bootstrap Web podcast, what we call the Lowlight podcast, where we ignore any highlights and really just talk about what we're learning along the way. That's myself and Brian Castle. And then if you're in e-commerce, check out carthook.com. And thank you again for having me on.
Been a pleasure. That was my pleasure. That was my pleasure, man. Thank you for coming on and chatting, and we'll catch up soon.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Rogue Startups. If you haven't already, head over to iTunes and leave a rating and review for the show. For show notes from each episode and a few extra resources to help you along your journey, head over to roguestartups.com to learn more.